In a moment, we are going to be talking about facts and figures and people about UFOs and ufology. Brent Luter back with us on Coast to Coast. Get ready for one heck of a ride. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Brent Luter with us, encompassing the concept of exploring human consciousness in his writings and his exploration of life. He believes that from global politics to personal health and from television to spirituality, human consciousness is the key, the golden thread, or the linchpin unlocking all the mysteries. After first being published back in 1996, he was inspired to earn a BA degree in journalism from Chico State University. And in his pursuit for answers and the desire to communicate his findings with others, he has gone on to write more than 700 articles, interviews, written a couple books, and produced two DVDs, Tales of a Heavy Heart and a UFO Hunter's Guide. Brett, welcome back to Coast. It's been, gosh, you were with us 6 years ago almost.
That's right. Way too long, but definitely happy to be here, and thanks for having me.
Good to have you back. What have you been doing over the last 6 years?
Besides taking way too long to get my next couple books out, I've been just doing, right, it's finding the time to do that and making a living seems to not always work. But I've been spending a lot of time doing lecturing. So I've got about 10 lecture DVDs that I'm waiting to produce or have produced. And I think I'm going to limit my speaking time these days because I've got books just burning a hole in me and I got to get them out.
Great. Well, you let us know when they're out and we'll get you back on again. And we won't wait 6 years to do that, okay?
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
So, do you call yourself a UFO hunter?
I don't know if hunter is really the right word. That title was my publisher's idea. My actual title for the book was Esoteric Guide to UFOs. But if you want to talk about the word hunter, honestly, I think we're the ones that are hunted. The tables are turned. We're not the ones in control of what's going on. That would be my take on that word, hunters. My editors or the publishers at Wiser Books didn't really see it that way. They have their own formulas and methods about what they think can sell books. And so,
And they're pretty good at that too, aren't they?
They are. I think they kind of missed the boat. I think with the UFO crowd, with mine, they really tried this psychological approach to the color, with the blue background and the yellow sign, like a street sign.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the UFO crowd's too smart for that kind of stuff. They're just not fooled by easy ploys to emotional appeals or little psychological cues. So I think that kind of backfired on them a little bit, and I'm going to be re-releasing the book under the original title, Esoteric Guide to UFOs. I have a bunch of new artwork for the cover, and we're going to have color photos and some other features added to it to make it different so we don't have any legal problems. So I think that was one case in which their formulas didn't really work out.
Well, and you're right. The UFO community has gotten pretty darn sophisticated over the last several years, hasn't it?
The information is starting to spread, maybe not as wide as we would like in terms of numbers, but the people that are into this stuff have educated themselves a lot. And when I do a lecture, I like to take a hands of people that have studied what I'm studying, and more hands are going up. So that's really encouraging, I think, because when I started lecturing, I had very few people that were listening. And another example, I talked to an old friend, Jordan Maxwell, a long time ago, and he said, friend of the show, right?
Yep.
And he said that he had an FBI friend to tell him that if more people paid attention to him, he'd be a threat. But because not really many people were listening, he wasn't really seen as a threat. So, but I think that number's growing. I think the powers that be, whatever those powers may be, we can discuss that. I think they're worried about the opposition, which would be us, I would say. And they're having to get more desperate with their actions. And, I don't want to get too much into politics here, of course, but there is definitely, I would say, a battle between good and evil, just to simplify it.
I think so, too. And, Brent, what got you involved in this in the first place? How did that happen?
Well, I had always been interested in UFOs, and I think my parents took me to see Chariots of the Gods when I was just a little boy at the movie theater, and I think that had a lasting impact. And I used to watch Star Trek. Original Star Trek with my dad on the couch.
Oh, that's great. You'll never forget that.
Really good memories associated with my dad with Captain Kirk, But then, you know, In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy, I was into all the early cartoons that were kind of paranormal and fantasy stuff. And then I had a buddy that I graduated with at Chico State University I played soccer with. He left for his hometown of Goleta near Santa Barbara, which is close to Vandenberg Air Force Base. And so he got his old job back as a civilian draftsman on the base, but he was not enlisted. But during that time, long story short, a friend with higher security clearance came to him and slipped him a little piece of paper with this file name. And he went to this file name and he printed out this 30-page document that I've since called the packet. And he was so excited when he called me on the phone about this packet that I planned a trip down to see relatives and swung back up and saw my buddy and showed me this packet. It turned out to be a pre-Behold the Pale Horse affidavit by William Milton Cooper, Bill Cooper, the late, great Bill Cooper.
That's right.
And so here I am, fascinated by all this stuff my whole life, and this document drops in my lap talking about who Jesus was and who really killed Kennedy and who the Greys were and how they needed our DNA to help their DNA so that their species didn't die. And a lot of the themes that I would later learn are common in ufology. And so on the way home, a couple nights later, I was stopping, you know, I was in Santa Barbara, say then I was Santa Cruz and Pleasanton, working my way back to Chico. I pulled over to go to the bathroom on this remote place on Highway 505, and I saw what I thought was a UFO, my first one ever. And so let's just say that experience that night let me know firsthand that the movies or the TV shows I was seeing were not lying and that these things were real. So that's where that started. That was about, 94 or 5, right in there. I was in college still, and I remember thinking, oh, hey, that's one of those UFOs. And then the next second I was like, oh, my God, I'm out in the middle of nowhere. And I read a Whitley Strieber book or two by that time, and I was like, well, I don't want to be abducted. So I got in my car and drove up, you know, just got out of there. So just kind of funny looking back. But, you know, I think if you go to enough UFO expos, someone's going to walk up to you and say, you know, you're not in ufology for no reason.
Right.
And or I've seen you on a ship, or I've seen you floating in a tube of liquid with tubes coming out your mouth, or, you know, do you have a clone or something like that? So I don't know really what to make of all that. You know, I was sitting on a panel once at a UFO event in Sacramento, and a woman just out of the blue in asking a question said, well, that guy's a hybrid. And I was like, well, really? I am?
So news to you, right?
News to me. Who knows, right? Maybe I'm like Sam Worthington's character in Terminator Salvation.
Maybe. That's right.
Where I don't know that I'm a robot, right, because of the programming. So whatever the case is, I think it's one of the most fascinating subjects that we could study. And I think I don't know if it's the linchpin of all the subjects, but it's definitely connected into consciousness in a variety of ways. And we need to know more about it to know more about ourselves.
It sure fueled this show and its origination many years ago with Art Bell, Brett.
That's right.
I mean, because I remember when I took over the program full time in 2003, and I would say, hey, I'm going to be doing Coast to Coast. People would just automatically say, oh, that's that UFO show. And
right.
That's what they got. I have heard several possibilities of where the UFOs may come from. One is, of course, the inner Earth.
Right.
The other is other dimensions. Another is outside the multiverses, other universes. And then I hear, of course, other planetary systems within our own universe as well. Which one do you think could be the most palatable?
You know, I think you can add to that two projections from your own mind, as, say, Carl Jung be a proponent of, or maybe Jacques Vallée. I think all the above. I think it depends on the situation. I think there are some things as hallucinations or those altered states of mind where interdimensional beings can enter through that kind of a doorway into one's mind. I do think that there's hard nuts and bolts craft that I don't know how far away they can come from. Physicists seem to debate about propulsion systems and how far is really far and and the ability to do that and what that would take. But I think that's what interdimensionality is, right? You just can switch in through a doorway, as portrayed in umpteen number of Hollywood movies. I just saw Jupiter Ascending. They had the little wolf guy, Super Soldier, had this little gadget where he'd stick it on a wall and it would just open up a circle and he could walk to wherever
walks
he
right through
to go,
it.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure about all that stuff. I tend to lean more towards that UFOs are of a spiritual nature, whether either they're hard ships, like, say, from the Billy Meier case, still some of the best photographs ever mm-hmm. taken, I think, or whether or not they're like from a Jacques Vallée kind of a scenario where they're projections from our own mind or interdimensionals that interact with us only on certain levels. So whatever they tend to be, I think you could go crazy trying to debate it and you'd lose sleep. But I think whatever they may be, they're drawn to us, let's say, through the law of attraction. Humanity is spiritually bereft in mass, and we drew this to us to help us teach us about ourselves and where we need to go, both individually and as a species.
There are some, like Dr. David Jacobs, who believes that extraterrestrials are not benevolent at all, that some of them could be evil, demonic. God, I hate to think that, but it's possible, isn't it?
I'm definitely open to that. I was baptized Roman Catholic, and my family didn't really practice. They weren't very devout. We didn't go to church. And, of course, I'd grow up and learn about what it's mainstream now, the pedophilia that's rampant within the church. I knew about that for years. South Park did an episode on it like 15 years ago. So, I mean, this stuff has been known for a long time. And so I kind of turned away from the church, right? Well, it's been a series of really dark abduction cases that I've investigated where it's this crossover into demonology, right? Or evil or dark reptilian kind of energy. One girlfriend had claw marks. She's been bruised.
Jeez.
Scoop marks, stuff like this.
Yeah.
Or they'll come back just traumatized. And so, you know, in an effort to try to stop this, I think Andrew Fell's book, I forget what it's titled offhand, about how to stop UFO abductions, is probably one of the best out there, but nothing seemed to work for my friend. And then I heard about Joe Jordan out of Florida, who was a former MUFON guy, who was chronicling testimonies of UFO abductees where they would shout out the name of Jesus and the UFO abduction would stop instantly. And so when I first started looking into Joe Jordan's work, there was like 100 people. I think there's well over 200 now, and the number's rising. And wow, I mean, for a rational, Western-minded journalist to run into this kind of information, what do I do with that? Do I just discard it because it doesn't fit into a rational kind of a view?
It doesn't fit, but it's bizarre, and I think you need to just recognize that there's a possibility there.
You have to stay open to it, right?
Yeah.
The counter view of this phenomena from ufology is that it's a lower astral entity, or there's certain ETs or aliens that are of a lower vibration, still higher than us, but they block us from getting to the higher realms because they're in this astral realm that's right above us. And because they're in this little position of power, let's say, above us, even though interdimensionally there's no above or below, let's say, but they use that position to influence us, whatever their agenda is. Honestly, I don't really see a difference between that and a demon. Once you look into what a demon is, and I'm not saying I actually know, but demons, one of those kind of things like a UFO, you can describe it in any number of ways, and I think the only really way you can describe it is to say all the above.
Right.
And so kind of like with a UFO, it may be a waste of time, although fascinating, to try to figure out exactly what it is. But more importantly, you got to realize, why is it there? Why did you draw it to you, and how do you deal with it? I think that's more important.
Brett, the Billy Meier case is one of your favorites. How come?
Man, well, I happened to inherit the books of Victoria Jack, the former organizer and producer of the Bay Area UFO
Expedition. Oh, yeah, yeah. How? By the way, I haven't heard about her in a long time. She had a liver issue. Is she okay, or did she pass on?
Still alive and kicking.
Okay,
she's
good.
In Sacramento. I'm hopefully going to be talking to her very soon.
Tell her hi for us.
I absolutely will. Well, she got caught up in the mortgage crisis back in 2009 and lost her house.
Oh, gosh. And so, I think she was using her house to kind of finance some of these events.
That was definitely the headquarters. I don't know exactly all the financial stuff that went on, but it was definitely a fun place to hang out. I'd get to hang out there with Ruben Uriarte or Jordan Maxwell or John Rhodes or any number of other guys, Ben Stoker, who writes for Atlantis Rising. All these characters are coming around, and it was just a really cool place to hang out. But I wound up inheriting Vicky's books, which was like 10 Wendell Stevens books, and all of his work and notes with the Billy Meier case. So I went through all those things, got the whole story, and, I mean, literally this supposedly beautiful blonde lady steps out of a craft, sits Billy Meier down under a tree, and tells him the story of the cosmos.
Yeah.
And so there's many facets that are fascinating to me. But in particular, and to make a long story short, there seemed to me to be this theme, excuse me, and a crossover with the history of the cosmos that was being dispensed by Semyase and what it would say, let's say, in the Book of Enoch. So let's say in the Book of Enoch, where supposedly it chronicles the story of the fallen angels, there's a leader, and the leader had 200 followers, right? 200 other lower angels that went with them. Well, there's a parallel with that in the Billy Meier stuff, in the Semyase stuff. Then you start to look into the name of Semyase, okay? In the Keys of Enoch with J.J. and Desiree Hertak, they talk about a Semyase, but it's spelled a little bit differently. Then you go back to the Book of Enoch itself, and they're talking about a Semyaza as the leader of the fallen angels, or the party of 200. And so you start to get this idea that why is this alien named after a fallen angel? And that really was a big red flag for me. And so I have a lecture about this, and I get into a whole bunch more detail, and there's other little clues as to who or what Semyase might be. But when I talked to Stuart Swerdlow, the survivor of the Montauk Project and mentalist, UFO contactee, really sweet man. He's donated a lot of his time with me with interviews. When I asked him about Semyase, he basically said that the original Semyase died.
Hmm.
And that's what it says in the Billy Meier case, or in the notes, that she hit her head and had to go to a whole nother universe to get fixed. So I'm not sure about an advanced race, supposedly as advanced as the Pleiadians, what would they need to go to another universe to, I don't know, I just found that kind of strange, right?
And his videos or his films are remarkable, and he shot them at a time that, you know, you didn't have all this gimmickry around.
Well, there's always debunkers, and there may be some curious events that happened with Billy Myers or any of the other, like, main cases, like Adamski or Van Tassel or anything, that would work to undermine it on certain levels. But then on other levels, I think irrefutably, some of those pictures are genuine. And so, you know, it's just like anything on Earth, George. When it starts to get good, when it starts to reach a certain number of people, the dark forces feel they're obligated to come in and put a stop to it, or to usurp it and twist it so that's not the pure message or method, let's say, that it was intended to be.
Brett, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break, then we're going to come back and chat more about UFOs. And next hour, of course, we'll take phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We are back with Brett Luter as we're talking right now about UFOs. What about the hollow earth theory, Brett? What do you think?
One of my favorite subjects. You know, there's those flat earthers out there. I think the only way that they could be right is if there's some kind of a blind spot in human consciousness, and that this is all a big holographic projection, and it's not, and maybe really it is flat. I think that's the only way that could be true, despite the evidence that they come up with, because as we can all see, when you take a, let's say, a beach ball and put a little bit of water in it and spin it, the physical material wants to stay to the outside of the inside of the things, of the sphere. So
right.
I think that's the same as the Earth. The Earth is spinning. Not all the rock, you know, it's lava before it becomes rock, and that's it's more pliable, and I think that gravity affects it. It spins to the outside. I think it's a no-brainer that we have a hollow Earth and our Earth is a sphere, just to answer that before that gets into be a debate. Look, many cultures have a history or some kind of a tradition of an inner Earth, whether that be inside of a hollow Earth or whether it just be some type of a subterranean in caves.
Right. I mean, the Hopis talk about ant people.
That's right. You know, their civilization was, the Earth was reseeded. I think it was after the third calamity in their tradition, and that I think that would mean we're in the fourth world and we just entered the fifth, if I get that right. I may have got that wrong. But in other words, this modern era has been seeded by the inner Earth people or people from inside the Earth. So it's a really common thing. You see this theme in Hollywood a lot. Again, going back when I was a little boy, Pat Boone's Journey to the Center of the Earth was monumental for me when those scenes of the like probably the 6-inch lizard, and they blow it up and put these little tiny humans there.
He's a monster.
That's right. As a little boy, that really worked good, right? It really worked well. So, you know, then, George, and you throw in the Nazis and you throw in the giants and alternative world history and aliens, and the inner Earth becomes this kind of a portal, no pun intended, for all these different subjects. We were talking about UFOs and one of the possible origins as being the inner Earth. I definitely think that that's one of the origins of UFOs. if you study some of the Lemurian traditions, if you're hanging around Mount Shasta at all,
sure.
Where there's a little more, that's a little more popular, those subjects. The whole universe is supposedly inside the Earth. So I'm not really sure how that would be possible, but that's what they think. And so I think that just parallels that individual notion that when you look inside, the whole universe is inside you.
Do you think UFO craft goes in and out of the hollow Earth?
I absolutely do think that. You know, I had a conversation again with Stuart Swerdlow back in 2006, and I mentioned to him that I would really like to go to the inner Earth, and he said, look, Brett, that most of those inner Earth places or entrances are guarded by reptilians, and if they see you, they'll just kill you. And besides, you'll most likely never find one because they're holographic, right? They have holographic-like covers, so you just look and see like a mountainside, but it would really be an entrance. Well, he told me during that conversation that the reptilians were actually listening to us, that conversation, because they monitor all of his activities. And so I was kind of startled by that a little bit, but of course we kept talking, and he would later go on to say that the reptilian spacecraft are real fiery and meteor-like, and that they that one was hovering in the middle of the comet Hale-Bopp, and that Hale-Bopp was a sentinel sent from the Draco system so that the mother planet of reptilians could look at their outpost. And, you know, he goes on to describe this, the reptilians that are here are like breaking away from the other planet. And so humans are kind of caught between the struggle between the two Draco factions. Anyway, it goes on to this whole big thing. But he basically said, look, Brett, if the reptilians want you to know that they're here, they'll show themselves. And so I just kind of took that with a grain of salt, honestly. But a couple days later, I was playing soccer, as I often do, at a local park.
Mm-hmm.
And as the team often does after a game, we go get pizza and beer. And on this particular day, I left the 20th Street Park like I normally do. I hang a left, and I got stopped right before I went on the overpass going over Highway 99 north of Sacramento. And so the light went green, and then almost immediately my eye got caught by a light looking over to the left. This is daylight. It was about 7:30 in the summertime, so plenty of light left. There was an oblong, fiery craft lowering itself into the Highway 70 Canyon about 25, 30 miles away. Clear as day, it like waited until my car was facing up going over the first part of the overpass. And I was like, oh, my God, it's exactly what Stuart said, a fiery kind of craft, and they'd show themselves if they wanted to. And so all I could do is take that as, you know, even if it wasn't a craft, some external force, you know, put that vision in front of my eyesight. So really fascinating stuff. I kind of forget what the question was.
We're talking about the hollow earth.
That's right. So this thing's descending into the canyon. Where's it going? Is it just going to, it's going inside the hollow earth. That's exactly what Stuart said, was that from.
So there could be creatures in there right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. So Swartland went on to say from Tahoe to Mount Shasta is the largest reptilian base in North America. So have you ever been to Mount Shasta, George?
I have not. We had an event we were going to go to, but it got canceled. I would have loved to have been there.
Yeah, they just, there was another couple events this week, and they both had, there was the summer event with Omnek Onek, the lady from Venus. She was back, and Ralph and Marcia Ring, among others. And then on the other side of the valley at the Heart Institute was the Ascended Master Conference, where David Lewis was there, and he is the man on earth that speaks for Saint Germain.
Interesting.
So pretty big thing. So, you know, Mount Shasta, I love that place. I don't get up there often enough.
Can you feel the power there?
Yeah, the energy? Both sides, too, because sometimes I get really raging migraines when I go there because the energy is just so high, or I'm not exactly sure what. But just like with any PowerPoint on Earth, it's going to be debated, let's say, diplomatically between the light and dark forces. And all I can tell you is what I experienced when I go there. And I spoke there 2 years in a row in 2014 and 15 for the Best of Mount Shasta conference. It's supposed to be for locals only. I slipped in there. Andrea Morgana is a channeler. She channels Hiawatha. She did a great job organizing this thing. Well, I gave my talks, and I'm sitting at my booth, and we're outdoors, really beautiful weather, at the Sacramento Headwaters Park. And a gentleman came up and said, you know, I have some business on the mountain, and that after we're done today, I should wrap up and go up there. I'm just like, okay. People tell me lots of weird stuff at events, right? So I just kind of take it with a grain of salt. But a second guy came up and said the same thing, a little bit different words. And so I'm like, well, okay, that's more than a coincidence. So, of course, we wrap up. It's still daylight. I head up to the top parking lot, which is as far as you can drive. It's where everyone has to stop and park, and then you hike after that. I thought, well, I'll just climb up this steep part next to the parking lot because it doesn't look like there's a path there, and I'll find some privacy relatively close to the parking lot, and I'll see what happens. Well, I climb up this little side of the mountain, and all I see is beer cans everywhere, and so I wasn't in a very private place, but it was too late to, like, go anywhere else, so I thought I'd just sit there and hang out. Well, nobody came by. It was pretty quiet. No hikers or anything. And then out of the blue, this one gentleman dressed in kind of like dolphin kind of material, that kind of silky. Do you remember those dolphin shorts when they came out in the 80s?
Oh, yeah.
Real
yeah.
Silky stuff. And kind of modern looking. He had real slick back hair. And he was real smiley, right? And you know, these days, not everyone's so happy and smiley all the time. And so I thought that was kind of odd. And then from about 50 yards away, he's waving to me. Hey, how you doing? How you doing? And so I just thought that was kind of odd. He walked up and on the main path and then walked over about 30 feet to where I was sitting and just sat and kneeled down and had a conversation with me for about 10 minutes. And he was a really nice guy. And he said he was Randy Joseph was his name. And so I thought that was kind of strange. I've heard of Billy Bob or Jim Bob or something like that, but never a Randy Joseph. And so then we parted ways. He walked on. And then about a half hour later, he came back walking by me, waved, and then he disappeared around this rock face where he should have come out the other side into the parking lot, and I never saw him come out. So I don't know what that really meant, but I thought that was kind of strange. And then it started to get dark, so I figured, well, I better walk down. I'm just going to go down the main path instead of the way it came up. So as I walked down and walked around that rock face where I speculate there could be some kind of an entrance because he didn't come out the other side, I just looked back and I, you know, some people say they get tapped on the shoulder, some kind of a feeling. I don't know why I looked back, but I looked back and right close to me is a big peak that's a lot smaller than the peak of Mount Shasta. But because of my perspective, it was like the close peak and Mount Shasta formed a perfect V. When I look back, a UFO went right in between the two V's. And you could tell it was a UFO because it moved way too fast for a plane, and it didn't come out the other side of Mount Shasta. So I took that as a sign that I was on the right path, that that UFOs are from the inner Earth, or at least that's one origin of them, and that my work with the ambassador to Telos, Diane Robbins, that work, I was on the right path, right? I was exploring one of the channeled tales from a supposed mayor of a city beneath Mount Shasta. So the legendary Lemurian outpost of Telos is supposedly still thriving beneath Shasta. And this lady, Diane Robbins, is the ambassador to Telos. And she speaks for Adama on Earth, kind of like David Lewis for St. Germain. So anyway, that was kind of my introduction to Ascended Masters. And this experience on the mountain, I think, kind of confirmed that I was on the right path.
Where does magic fit into this, Brian?
Very interesting subject. Again, one of my favorite subjects.
You love the paranormal.
I really do. And we're going to discuss why that is, I think, coming up. It's inevitable. Law of attraction again. But we'll get to that in a second. Magic, there are so many different definitions of it. I studied different traditions of shamanism or native spirituality or, esoteric Christian sects or Buddhism, right? There's so many different things you can study. Ekankar, suppose he's not even from Earth. Different disciplines like this. And I began to see that there were so many different definitions of magic, I had to come up with my own. I had to understand it in a way that I could make sense of it. And what I came up with was that all the different traditions use the same three things. They use intentions, they use symbols, and they use rituals. And right. It's from those three tools, what I call the tools of manifestation or the tools of binding, a human consciousness can interface with the external universe. It could interface with another consciousness. In other words, communication involves those three things. Or it could interface with itself, with its higher self, or go inside. And so for me, that's what magic is the usage of the three tools of manifestation, intentions, symbols, and rituals. And when you choose your intentions justly or benevolently or wisely, and you choose the proper symbols, and then you act them out in some kind of a ritual, which by my definition is any activity a human does in the physical world can be construed as ritual, which is a much broader definition than, say, what an anthropologist would say a ritual is.
Right.
And my view on that is that, look, nothing that us humans are doing now are we doing new. Everyone eats and sleeps and has conversations and gets upset and gets happy and does all the same things that humans have been doing ever since we've become fully evolved. And depending on who you talk to, that could be up to millions of years. So for me, everything a person does, what we're doing now is ritual. Lectures are ritual. Concerts are ritual. But mundane things, too, are ritual. So everything you do is a ritual. And when you apply the right intentions and the symbols and act them out in the right ritual, you will manifest the desired outcome.
It'll happen.
And so this mimics, it's just like many of the other traditions teach, just in different language. Here's another one for you. Kevin Trudeau, I think, has done some really good work. And he gave a 14-hour lecture called Your Wish is Your Command, and it's about how to reprogram your brain for success and for abundance, right? And he says that the big secret in secret societies is how to manifest. And it's this simple technique whereby you choose the right symbols, right? What your desired outcome is, right? Those become the symbols.
Mm-hmm.
Your intention then to make it manifest has to do with attaching positive, joyous emotions to that symbol, and that's it. And then you let it go and let the universe do the rest. So that's what magic is to me, okay? And so that plays into all kinds of things like UFOs and mind control and demonology and Because it's the language of the consciousness. It's the three tools that consciousness uses to communicate and, again, interface with itself or with the external universe.
We were talking, Brett, about your love of the paranormal, and you wanted to elaborate on that.
Well, I think the law of attraction, again, works not just, you know, if the mass of society has drawn UFOs to us to help us further spiritually advance, or maybe go through ascension, what many of your guests have talked about, I would say that's true on the individual level as well. And so I do have a deep desire to know who I am and why I'm here in this really crazy, absurd world where up is down and left is right, and now things are getting all backwards nowadays.
And people are uptight like crazy.
It's really absurd on so many levels. And so why would I be here at this time? It just seems like if I was a soul looking down on Earth and going, boy, I could choose a lot more happy and less stressful places to be, right? So I think it's logical that I came here to further my own growth and to help the situation if I can on an individual or a macro level. And I've drawn this occupation of ufologist toward me because what I discovered about ufology is that, yeah, it's fun to talk about physics and propulsion systems and nuts and bolts, but what ufology has done for me is it has put me in touch with a multitude of other spiritual traditions.
We'll talk more about that, Brett, when we come back. Plus, we'll take an hour of phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.